This is a podcast from Minute Media.
In the fall each year we all congregate, the bound all gathered at the church of tailgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God, a freshman. Drunk and obnoxious, we'll choose your fate. Ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday and last thing.
Welcome to the Saturday in Athens podcast. We're a Georgia Bulldog show. I'm your host, Herschel Gurley, joined as always by my co-host, Boss Dog. Boss, bark at the people.
What's happening, everybody? I can't remember the last time we actually had a show with just the two of us, so we got a ton to catch up on. So we're just going to dive right in.
Yeah, man. Summer's been wearing us both out. Both had a lot of activities going on. Boss just getting back from a lovely vacation at the beach. How was the vacation? You had a good time?
It was wonderful. By Thursday, we were all so exhausted. We were like, when are we going home? So sun kicked everybody's butt. It was wonderful. Nice to get away. We went with another family with their kids too. All the kids got along. It was wonderful though. Really nice getaway.
Yeah. And I need the vacation from the vacation as it goes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Well, like you said, a lot to cover. Lots been going on. We taped today, and it is report day for fall camp, and they will start fall camp tomorrow, August 4th. So finally, talking season is over, and we're actually going to have some pads clanging. So that's a good thing. It means things are getting close. I think as of our taping, we're 31 days from kick in the bends. And in some ways, I feel like the summer, I'm not going to say the off season, but the summer has felt like it's gone by quicker than last summer did. Maybe some of that is just we're the champs, baby. So I'm not like so ready for it to begin. I mean, I am so ready for it to begin, but it's a different, I don't know. There's a different emotion around it this year. I think a different urgency. It's like as a fan, I just feel great. Just living the dream, summer of champions. It's fantastic, right? So yeah. It's just a different feeling. Same for you or different?
No, I completely agree. There's not that – there's eagerness, but it's not that uneasy eagerness like, oh, my God, what's the season going to bring? It's the – it's excited anticipation at this point because we are the champs. And What is this season going to bring? Is this going to be a repeat of last season? Like that it's an expectation of a repeat of last season. I'm not one of those fans who's like, if we don't repeat, it's a disappointment because no, I mean, when was the last time somebody repeated? Like it's been what, 30 years? Something crazy like that?
Bama has no repeats in that stretch with Saban. I thought they went back to back 1 year. No?
No, I don't think they I don't think they have any repeats in that stretch. I think the last repeats were it wasn't Miami in the 80s, was it? That wasn't the last repeat, was it?
No, I don't know. I'll have to look on that.
I know Saban hasn't had a repeat in that because that was one of the, for lack of a better term, bitch fests I got into with the fan because they were talking about how, you know, if Georgia didn't repeat, this was just a fluke one-off. And I'm like, Saban's never had a repeat. And we went back and looked through it. And he has not had a repeat.
Yeah, because USC's repeat was dashed with Vince Young in the Rose Bowl. So, And they were apt for it. And then early 2000s, Miami's hopes were dashed for it with Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yep.
And I would say those are two pretty dominant teams that I thought would have been up in that conversation. What about the Nebraska teams in the 90s? Not them either?
I'd have to go back and look. Maybe in like the 94, 95, like the Lawrence Phillips teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to look at that. That's interesting. Yeah. I'm not either. Would not be a disappointment to me if they didn't win the title. I think so many things go into winning a title in every sport, not just college football. I mean, winning a title takes some breaks to go your way. And I think we would all be naive if we didn't say they had some breaks go their way through the course of the playoffs and all those things. So, you have to have all that. And then you have to have a really good team too. So there's a lot involved in those things. For me, I will say this though. Okay. I want to know how bold I want to be about this. For me, with the roster coming back and with the schedule that they have, it will be a disappointment for me if they're not back in the playoffs, though. That will not be a successful season in my eyes, if they're healthy. Let me caveat that with if they're healthy, because they should go 12-0 in the regular season.
Yeah, they should go 12-0 in the regular season. I will say this. If it's one of those situations where it's 12-0 in the regular season, lose the SEC championship, and there's three other undefeated teams, I'm not going to be like extremely, you know, heartbroken about that.
Yeah.
With the caveat, they lose the SEC championship. Yeah. So, but if it's same scenario as last year, yes, like I fully expect them to make the playoffs. But I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here talking about end of season stuff, but
No, 100%. I'm just trying to set an expectation for kind of where we're coming from.
Yes.
When we talk about all this stuff, you know, like I think expectations are a good thing. And I think this program is at a point where we should have expectations of excellence. And I think that's what Kirby has built. I think that's what Kirby wants. I think the program has expectations of excellence. I think he spoke to that directly at SEC Media Days when he said, this program was built for the long haul. Essentially saying, hey, y'all, we ain't going nowhere. I mean, he didn't say it that countrified, but that's what he was saying, right? And good. I'm glad he's saying that because that's how we want it to be. That's how I feel. And I think that's how the players and everybody inside that building feels. So I don't know. Maybe it's not bold to say it that way. I mean, that's my expectations, that they go to the playoffs. I think with this roster, if they are healthy and with that schedule, they should be 12-0 playing in Atlanta for the second time this season and then looking to play in Atlanta a third time. Because isn't the semifinal at the Peach Bowl this year? Is that right?
Pretty sure, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's the Peach and the Rose again.
No, Peach and the Fiesta.
Oh, Peach and the Fiesta. That's right.
Yeah, and then the title game is out in L.A., at SoFi. So let's go right into that, because I want to talk to you about, I don't want to belabor it because I know it's been talked about a ton and we're a little late getting to it, but I do want to touch on a few things that Kirby said at Media Days and just some highlights of it.
Okay.
And the first one is, and I haven't really heard a lot of people comment on this, he made a comment during his presser that this is the best staff that he's ever had at the University of Georgia. And my eyes kind of went, well, I mean, homie, that's a big statement. We're talking, he had a staff that now has two NCAA head coaches on it. Actually, three. He had Tuck Beamer and Pittman on the same staff, all heads of Power Five schools now. And he said, this year's coaching staff, best coaching staff he's ever had since he's been there. So that kind of made me go, oh, eyebrows raised up on that one, because good. That's outstanding. That's what you want.
I love that fact, first of all. But just because you have three Power Five coaches on there doesn't necessarily mean that they all mesh well together. So that could be what he's saying with his staff. And, you know, bringing in Fran Brown, bringing the promotion of half promotion of Schumann because he's co-defensive coordinator with Muschamp, having the relationship with Muschamp, you know, all of that gelling together on the defensive side of the ball and the young hungriness of Fran Brown. And I mean, let's just say what it was. Adai just rubbed people the wrong way. Like, it wasn't flat out said, but I have a good friend who is very well connected with West Virginia football.
Yeah.
And nobody was really upset when he left.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
So apparently that's his MO. So, and I don't think too many people were upset when he left Georgia.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think that Kirby is wants a certain type of model of coach, and he's got that in almost everybody. He's got a good mix of the seasoned and especially on the offensive side of the ball, and a good mix of the young and hungry really on the defensive side of the ball. And they're all really good recruiters.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. The second thing I want to point out is, and we posted a bunch about it on our social, and everybody and their mama posted about it, and they should have, because it was just the quote of all quotes. And that is, we will not be hunted at the University of Georgia. We will be doing the hunting. And first off, what a just electric quote going into a season opener where you're playing the Ducks with all of the duck hunt. I mean, ramifications of that. Yeah. So I love that. But he was very forceful about that. And that was the lead in then to, there will be no complacency. We have built this program for the long haul and we're not going anywhere. I mean, that was the whole kind of realm of all that. And he did all that in his opening statement without even taking any questions, just kind of like cutting those questions off to go, I know you guys are probably going to all ask me questions along these veins. So here it is. This is how we feel about it. He also made a comment kind of like, look, you guys talk about complacency. Well, all these players that are here now, they haven't done anything yet. Like, we had a bunch of guys leave, 15 guys go to the NFL, really more than 15, but 15 drafted. And these guys now haven't done anything, which I thought kind of was like a gauntlet, like a challenge laid down. Like, hey, boys, it's your turn now. Let's roll. And so I liked that. I mean, that was another one that stuck out to me about it. And then this is less about a quote takeaway and more about an attitude. He was very confident and very assured. And I know he always gives that off when he's at these type of things, but it was different than that. It was more of a, we're real confident about where we are as a program. And real confident about the roster that we currently have and the roster that we're going to continue to have. And doesn't that feel like for you as a fan, the biggest change between years past and the era of Kirby? Meaning, I feel like every summer and offseason, you and I would have conversations about, well, we could do this if X, Y, and Z go right. Or, yeah, this could happen if so-and-so has this kind of year. And now, I mean, dude, we don't have those conversations like ever. It's just, how bad are we going to beat somebody's ass? Right?
I mean, no, that's exactly right. Because for the wheels to come off, there has to be, in my opinion, a slew of injuries,
yeah,
or I mean, something catastrophic has to happen. Because I mean, you look at last year, going into last season, you tell me the beginning of last year that JT Daniels gets hurt week one, realistically, and then doesn't come back until Vandy, which was what, week four, then gets hurt again, and then doesn't realistically play again the rest of the season. If you tell me that at the beginning of the year and tell me nothing else, what do I think our chances are to win the national championship? Realistically.
Yeah, not great.
I mean, or even the SEC at that point, or, you know, do anything that we did last year. That is not the mentality going into this year. Mm-hmm. Georgia is, with the depth that the team is built, they're not one guy. But it took us a lot of the Ricked trauma to get over that. A lot of that was, you know, I mean, 2013 will stick in my head forever, because that team going into that year was supposed to be, you know,
really good.
2012, you know, part two.
Yeah.
And Gurley gets hurt. Then half the offensive line gets hurt. Keith Marshall gets hurt. Then we're down to Murray and two wide receivers, and Murray's running for his life. Then both linebackers get hurt, if I remember correctly, in like the first game of the season against Clemson. It was just, I mean, it was the walking wounded. We had J.J. Green, who bounced between cornerback and running back, and Brandon Douglas at running back that year, yeah, for the majority of the year until Gurley came back.
That was a tough year.
Georgia's built now to withstand those type of injuries, now hoping something like that never happens again, but they're built to withstand that type of attrition.
Yeah.
Due to what Kirby has done.
The depth is different. And we talked about this a lot last year. They just look different. I remember going to G-Day last spring and thinking, you just look on the sideline and it's like you're looking at an NFL team. I mean, the roster composition is just so vastly different from how it's been over the course of us following the team for 20 years. And I think that's the biggest change. Speaking off that, another interesting thing Kirby mentioned was that 95 players on the roster have NIL deals, which I found that interesting. I think that was strategic to bring that up because I think he just wants to put that out there in the stratosphere, you know, like, hey, we got NIL stuff happening here. Cause I think that has been a bit of a knock so far. And I will say I've learned recently that I don't have solid information on this, but I think there is some co-branding friction between the university and the athletes as it pertains to NIL versus other schools. So for example, if I am Stetson Bennett and I want to go sign an NIL deal with somebody, they can use my name, image, and likeness, but I don't think they're allowed to use George's branding while he's using his name, image, and likeness. Does that make sense? So like,
That makes perfect sense because I don't know. I mean, it's probably been eons since you collected sports cards or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So here's a perfect example. When players are first drafted into the NFL, they all get their first cards, but all their first cards are usually in their college uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Certain brands of sports cards don't have deals with the colleges, so they can't use it. So they basically watermark it out. So like, you know, my wife is a huge Zeus fan. So I got her a couple of Zamir White cards and a couple of the cards. They not only do they not have Georgia logos, they can't have Nike logos on it. So they got to watermark it out. So yeah. It's just a very, very blank red helmet, blank red jersey, has the number on it. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I think that's something they're going to have to navigate and do it pretty quickly because if you're going to be, and I hate to say it this way, but this is real, if you're going to be quote unquote competitive in the NIL framework of recruiting, you can't say, well, hey guys, you can go negotiate a deal, but you can't use any of the university branding. Like that's part of your branding if you're the player. So
yeah, that's part of your brand.
They got to figure that out. I was talking with somebody about this and I was like, how marketable is Stetson Bennett without his Georgia helmet and Georgia jersey, right? I mean, that's how we see him. And it's not just Stetson, it's anybody on the roster. How marketable is Bryce Young if he can't wear the helmet with the number on it, with number 9 on it? It's different, I feel like, from an image perspective. So that they're going to have to figure that out. That's something they need to, I think, get straight because I think it would behoove them to allow the players to use it. I'm not saying they got to use it for everything. Like the kid wants to do CBD oil, I don't think they have to let him wear the uniform, yeah. But they got to have some give and take on that, I feel like. And so we all know,
do you think this is a
slow to license their marks? Cause they're always the last person to be on different apparel.
Do you think this is a school specific, like certain schools are having an issue with this, or do you think this is just across the board?
No, my impression is it's an administrative choice at Georgia, which works hand in hand with how protective they are about their marks and their licensing of apparel and all those type things. What I'm saying is they've got to open the door a little bit and let the players use the marks. So I just think it's a smart thing to do if you're being proactive and looking forward. So we'll see. But I just know that there have been a couple instances where players are pursuing NIL deals that would then include apparel and things of that nature. And the caveat is, well, the apparel can't include any Georgia marks. Well, if I'm the apparel provider, that changes things for me because 8-year-old kid wants to have a t-shirt with Stetson Bennett wearing his Georgia jersey, not Stetson Bennett wearing a blazer. Right? Yeah. So they got to figure that out, in my opinion. That's just one Huckleberry's opinion, but That's my opinion. They got to figure that out. So, the other thing that was obviously big news coming out of media days that Kirby said was his firm stance that he wants the cocktail party to move on campus. And I want to get your take on it. I think you're pretty clear with how I feel about it. And it was interesting. I posted a coin flip on our Instagram story for people to respond and say, heads, it stays in Jacksonville. Tails, it moves on campus. 78% of the responses, and we had like 50 plus responses. 78% of the responses, move it on campus. Shocked. I like could have knocked me over with a feather. 50-50 wouldn't have surprised me. 78% to move it on campus. And I was like, wow. So first off, where do you sit on that? And do you think that sentiment is more driven by Kirby's comments and people just being in line with head coach Kirby Paul Smart? Or do you think people just don't dig it being in Jacksonville?
Okay, my answer is going to be a little different than yours. I love it in Jacksonville. I'm going to be the so we agree on that. We both love it in Jacksonville. But I think that if we are going to continue to schedule neutral site games against other opponents, other big opponents, we need to not necessarily move the Georgia Florida game. We need to do something with it. Maybe do the every third year thing. So campus Jacksonville, mm-hmm. or some other way, or we need to figure out a way to do more home and homes with other opponents.
Yeah.
Instead of doing neutral site games with opponents, we need to find a way because we're losing too many recruiting home games.
Let me stop you real quick. Cause I think that's an excellent point. I think that is part of this debate that I'm on board with. Okay. Is from a scheduling perspective, and it's beyond scheduling, it's beyond recruiting, it's layered. We already have a neutral site game every single year, okay? Everybody and their mama knows that. Well, we're going now two straight years where we're also having neutral site game to open the year, which is awesome too. We had a blast in Charlotte last year. I'm fired up about going to Atlanta this year. It's cool to be in these big neutral site openers. But how awesome would it be to play Clemson on campus? How awesome would it be to play Oregon on campus and be in Sanford and have that environment? So you're losing a home game when you do that. And dude, the home schedule this year ain't exactly lit. So I get it. Yeah. If I'm a season ticket holder that, hey man, every other year we know we're getting at least Florida at home and that's going to be lit. So dude, I think that's a fantastic point. That's why I want to stop you because I just want to harp on that. I think that's valid. And I think that's something that needs to be fleshed out within the argument. So go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to point that out.
So, and the other argument I think is that it's generational. I think that you're going to have a lot of people. Basically, I think we're the stopgap. Anyone 35 and older is going to want to keep it in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone 35 and 34 and younger is probably not going to have that attachment to it that we do.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the 10, 15 plus year history that we do with it. You know, I mean, we've been going to this game, you know, had this attachment to this game for, I mean, at this point, almost 20 years for us.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. some longer.
Yeah.
You know, people in their early 30s or younger don't have that attachment to it. And to them, it's a fun weekend, but it's not that great because they have the other experiences of the Atlanta, the Charlotte, the Rose Bowl, you know, all that stuff that's better memories for them. And the rivalry, they don't remember the 90s that were terrible, the mid 2000s mm-hmm. where it was so back and forth. To them, the rivalry isn't as big as it is to us because it wasn't. Now it's more, we still hate them, but it's more one-sided towards us. They don't remember when it was so one-sided towards Florida.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I do think that's part of it. I loathe them so much as a rival. I've been very clear about that in the stuff we've talked about. So for me, that's just the one. Like, if we're going to go 1-11, they're the one I want to win. And that's just how I feel about it. And so that's a piece of it. The other piece of it is, and you know this, your boy's a romantic. So the romanticism of the history and the neutral site and being only one of three annual games that's at a neutral site. I love all that. You know, I mean, I would be equally as upset if they moved Oklahoma, Texas on campus. I love the Red River Shootout at the Cotton Bowl. And I mean the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
Not this, not this bullshit where they're playing the actual Cotton Bowl at Jerry World. Like bothers me too. And to be honest with you, if they made the choice to move the Red River Shootout to Jerry World, just move it on campus. Like, it ain't the same. Like, you got to have the state fair and like a 7 foot long corn dog and, you know, all the funnel cakes you can eat and a Ferris wheel ride before you go see Oklahoma whoop up on Texas. So I feel the same way about that. But yeah, I mean, but man, I'm telling you, Kirby's pushing on it. And I don't think he would push on something this actively publicly if there wasn't at least a little bit of momentum behind closed doors that it's going to become reality. Do you?
No, I don't ever think it's going to completely go away from it, though. I do think that there's a potential for the rotation every 3 years, but I don't think it's going to ever fully go away. Just because of the tradition of it. I don't, maybe eventually, but I mean, for one, the financial aspect of it, it's not like with all the money that the schools are bringing in right now, it's not like that it's a huge windfall, but the money aspect of it's right there. And also the contract. I mean, think about the money it would take to get out of the contract that they have.
Well,
no school, neither school's going to want to pay that.
That's a piece of it though, is that the contract is up, I think, next year. So
I thought it was 25.
I
thought it was just renewed to 25.
I think there's an opt out in 23 or something, like, because that's what everybody kept talking about, is that 23 could be the last year that they're there. So I don't know, man. It's going to be real interesting to track. I do think the solution you bring up would be palatable to people like me who are very attached to it being neutral. That, okay, we're going to go on campus, but it's going to be rotational, and every third year we're going to be back in Jacksonville. But see, I don't know that is palatable to Kirby. Doesn't seem that way.
Because no.
I think to him, it's purely based on the recruiting piece of it. So I don't know, man. I don't know what's going to happen with it. And it's something to track though for sure, because it's real. I mean, I think the momentum, and I don't, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like he talks about it once a year. It's not something that continually happens, but I thought this was the most forceful position that he's taken in the biggest spotlight. I mean, I don't think it was by happenstance that at SEC Media Days, when all eyes are on you as the defending national champions coach, to in an interview bring that up with a Gator legend or not bring it up. I mean, I think Tebow asked him about it, but he certainly didn't back down from where he sits on it. So, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't help, though, that Jacksonville's not really the mecca. You know what I mean? It's
100%. It's Jacksonville. Yeah, 100%. That's true. You know, it's not the destination that you would go to if there wasn't an outstanding football game being played there. Let's put it that way. Like, exactly. it wouldn't be the top place on your list. And I get that. You know, I totally get that. So, yeah, I don't know, man. We're going to see. It's going to be real, real interesting. All right, I want to pivot off Kirby and talk to you about another it may be my favorite tidbit from all of SEC Media Days. Stetson Bennett is getting interviewed at the dais, and Nolan Smith walks up acting like he's a reporter from the Daily Morning News, and he says, "Who is your favorite outside linebacker on the team?" And Stetson, like, barely blinking, goes, "That's going to have to be Bobby Beal." And everybody, like, thought it was very funny that he was not saying Nolan Smith. And that is very funny and ha-ha. But let's not bury the lead here, folks. The fact that the fellows in the team are calling Robert Beal Bobby Beal, and this is just coming to light for us as very, very tuned-in fans. Homie, if you think I am ever calling number 33 Robert Beal again, you have gone crazy. He will forever now be Bobby Beal to me. And that is a just electric name. Let's not make any bones about it. Electric name. First team all conference name. So Bobby Beal might have 10 plus sacks now. Oh, let's just put that out there.
No, I love it. That was spectacular. So, and also the little tidbit of his interview with the little Friends call back there. So, I thought you were going to lose. I saw that and I was like, Seth's going to lose his mind over this.
I'm so happy you brought that up. So, if you guys haven't seen it, and if you didn't see me post it on our social, Boss is referring to Year of the Dog, which aired on SEC Network, which was awesome. I mean, that's been one of the cooler parts of the offseason is that there's just been so much stuff that you can keep being nostalgic about last season. And it was cool because it was kind of a look behind the scenes a little bit. One of the things was they showed a little precursor to an interview that Stetson had done with Jen Latta of ESPN between the Orange Bowl and the national title game. And she's wearing like these black leather pants. And there's an episode in Friends where I think it was the New Year's resolution episode. And Ross says, I've always wanted to wear leather pants. And so he wears leather pants and he goes on a date with this girl, but he has to use the bathroom. So he goes to take a leak, but he's sweating because the leather pants are so hot. So then when he is done taking a leak, he goes to pull the leather pants back up and they won't come up. They're like too hot. Or maybe he wasn't even taking a leak. He was just so hot. He was having to like fan himself because he couldn't stand anymore. I can't remember. I haven't seen the episode in a long time. But anyways, he calls Joey on the phone from the bathroom. He's like, Joey, I can't get my pants back up. And Joey's like, is there any powder around? It'll suck up all the moisture. So like sprays all this powder on him. The next morning, he's like, how about lotion? The lotion will help the pants slide back up. And so then he puts the lotion on. And then he tells Joey, he goes, the lotion and the powder have formed a paste. And Joey says, this is the solution. Just make yourself a pair of paste pants. I mean, it is a world-class episode. So anyways, I tell you all of that. Tell you that Stetson walks into the interview with Jen Latta. And he goes, You watch Friends? And she's like, yeah. He goes, remember the episode when Ross wore those pants? I mean, I had to pause it and be like, did he just say that? I ran it back like three times. I almost fell off my couch. I was laughing so hard. And he said it with the biggest shit-eating grin on his face too, which made it even better. I mean, woo, it got your boy. I mean, in all the right places. So yeah, this is just another peek inside your co-host brain. But yes, that was my
Stetson favorite. Went up a little another few notches in my book of being a Friends fan.
Oh man, way up. And you want to know the first person I texted? Cole Wilcox. I said, Cole.
Yep.
This is beautiful. So yeah. That was just an all-timer. All-timer. Stetson went way up in my book. I was like, my man is a closet Friends fan and dropping knowledge on the people. Just awesome. Yeah, that was good. Very glad you brought that up because I would have forgotten about that. But yes, that was very, very good. Yeah, it was speaking back on his interview too. It was cool to hear him talk about the Blue Angels. And he said, anytime now when Top Gun comes on, I tell all my friends, hey, you know, I did that. Dude, he's kind of funny. Funnier than I thought he was, to be honest with you. I think because he's always been so buttoned up in his media, but dude, he's pretty funny. So yeah, I'm looking forward to him having more media availability and feeling more comfortable to just drop lines like that out of the clear blue yonder. All right. One more thing for media days, because it's right up you and I's alley. How much are you going to cut a check for to the College Football Hall of Fame to have that portrait of Harry Dog in the King's regalia with Uga at his feet to have at Casa de Boss? Like how big a check are you stroking for that thing?
I as much as my wife will let me. So
when I saw the picture, so Logan Booker from 960 The Ref posted it, the picture of it. And my first thought was Boss would pay no less than $1 million for that painting right there.
I was like, my first thought was when I saw it, I was like, that'll make a great tattoo.
Ooh, that's a good one. Hey, you need some new ink, brother. Get you something.
I do.
Yeah, man. I, that thing was cool. I direct messaged the College Football Hall of Fame on Twitter and was like, hey, can we get some like details on this? Like, I feel like this just kind of went under the rug. Can we see like who the artist is? So if the artist is selling prints, everybody and their mama can buy a print. Like, let's hype the artist up here. So I'm still working on that. When I get the information back on the artist, I'm gonna blast it out there by that'll listen. Cause man, I need to print at least. I mean, I ain't got the kind of money to actually buy the painting, but I need a print or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That thing was awesome, man. Really, really cool. And plus, anytime you integrate Harry and Uga in the same thing, world class. So I need to get on that. Also, after Media Days, Kirby got himself a big old check. I mean, our man got PAID. Yeah. That's why my moms hate me. So, and I was happy about it. Give him all that money.
No one deserves it more. And then, did you find it interesting that right around the time the contract was announced, that there was the news came out that he was talking about retiring after COVID year?
Yeah, all right.
Like, that came out right around the same time.
Yes. All right, good pull on that. I do want to talk about that because I felt like that was one of these things where he was at a coaching clinic in Texas when he was talking to the Texas Coaches Association or something. But the way I took it was, and I think the video is better about it being this way, it's one of those things you say. You know, man, we were so exhausted after the recruiting period, I was ready to retire. Not, I was actually thinking about retiring. Does that make sense?
No.
You see the difference in those?
Yeah, that's exactly how I took it.
And I think somebody jumped on that as, oh, Kirby wants to retire, as more of a way to spin views on an article or get their tweet retweeted than it was that's what he actually meant. But boy, that thing got legs real quick.
I mean, he got as many legs as, you know, him talking about how, you know, like Shannon Sharp going off about how he hates NIL and all this crap. And,
you're talking about much ado about nothing, too. That was ridiculous, which also just goes to show you these drive-bys that don't consume anything related to college football year-round, nor the Georgia football program year-round. If you know anything about Kirby Smart, he's all about taking care of his guys, which NIL hopes you do. I mean, he's been an advocate for it from the start. So, yeah, that was ridiculous, which I'm glad that kind of went away. That was only like one news cycle, I feel like, before that was pretty much under the rug. But, yeah, so he's locked in 10 years. I think by a certain point it makes him the highest paid coach in college football, which he should be. And we've talked about this, man. I think if he wants to, he'll stay there till he retires. You know, he'll just be there until he doesn't want to be there. You get to a point, I think I was talking with Jason Hasty about this. Do you think at a certain point we get to his name being on something? Probably not while he's coaching, but does it become Dooley Smart Field?
Dooley Smart Field?
Or does it become Sanford Smart Stadium if he wins multiples? Like, how does all that go?
I could see that. It depends on the longevity. If he only, you know, coaches there for a total of 10, 11 years, it depends on the longevity. Like,
yeah,
if we're talking that he's part of the, like, if he retires and then goes into like the athletic department, like Dooley did, and he's part of the program for 30 plus years. Yeah, there's no question. But if he's just part of the program for like another 3 or 4 years, and this is the peak, and then that's it, I'm not sure. Like, I'm really not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested. You know, I feel like in general, UGA is funny about, I don't even know what you'd call them, idols, meaning like statues and stuff like that for the fans to come worship.
He might be dead before it happens at this rate. Like, the fact that Dooley was still around when Dooley Field happened, honestly, is a miracle, because it took them 25 years.
Yeah, that took way longer than it should have. I'm interested to see what'll happen with that and how those things will materialize. I will say this. Let's caveat all this with different world we're living in now with Josh Brooks as AD. So
that is true.
I do think that changes the calculus on all that, just because I think Josh is way more in tune to those type of things. So I think that's a good thing as it pertains to that. Well, we talked about it a little bit. So fall camp starting tomorrow, August 4th, we're taping on the 3rd. So August 4th, they're starting, and we'll obviously have a lot more coverage now that fall camp is starting up, and chat with you guys and talking about the roster and all those type things. But give me a player on offense and on defense that you are excited to see come 9-3 that maybe the general public is not talking about or keyed in on.
That's tough. Give me a year or two, and then I'll give you my gut feeling on this.
Okay. I did a 2-minute offense on this week. My offensive one is Arian Smith. You are very clear in how I feel about Arian Smith. If Arian Smith is healthy,
yeah,
for this entire season, he will be on highlight packages each weekend. I mean, that's just how he is. He is must-see TV when he is on the field. Like the guy, when you see his number run on the field, you go, whoop, get ready, baby. Something electric's about to happen. So he's my offensive one. My defensive one, and I feel like his name has not gotten mentioned one time this entire offseason, Chaz Chambliss. I am very interested to see the role that he plays. Dude, he's a true freshman last year. He plays in, I think, 14 of the 15 games. And Kirby, very early on in the spring last year, mentioned him, his example, how hard he worked, all those type things. So he's one I got an eye on, brother. I think he could make an impact. So those are my two, Arian Smith and Chaz Chambliss.
All right. Mine are completely different. This shows you where our mind goes. Mine are not as flashy. Yep.
Boss is both going to be in the trenches.
No, one, I want to see how Tate's recovered.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So I think that he is key to how the offensive line shakes out. If he is healthy, I think we probably know the starting five right away. If he is not healthy, I think both guards spots are in play. And then on defense, I want to see Xavien Sword. Yeah. Because I remember when he came in, I mean, highly touted. And then also, it's twofold on defense. I want to see Xavien Sory and Ryan Davis, because Ryan Davis has been on campus 2 years, had season in the injuries, came in with a season in the injuries freshman year, had another season in the injury in spring last year. He came in highly touted as well. Both of those guys, I think, could solidify the linebacking core much more than people are saying. Now, I mean, there's JDJ is obviously the flashy one from last year, got some playing time in the blowouts. I think he's almost positive he's going to be one in the rotation, because I think we're going to rotate three or four in the middle linebackers. But I think both Ryan Davis and Xavien Sory could surprise some people.
Yeah, I think Pop's the mainstay. I'll be shocked if he's not on the field every play at one of those positions. Yeah, I like those. I like all those. Did you see the video they posted yesterday, Georgia Football's IG, of them lifting weights? It was Max Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you see what he said? Did you see what Tate said when he was lifting?
Uh-uh.
Baby weight. He was putting up his baby weight. That's what he said when he put it up. Let's just be assured it was not baby weight.
Speaking of weightlifting and tying this into Georgia Football, did you see the squat that Nick Chubb did a couple of weeks ago?
I mean, he is from a different planet. He might be a distant cousin of Thor. Like, seriously. It's outrageous the amount of weight that human can put on his body and just throw around with ease.
Yeah.
How much
he did two reps. It looked like it was about 700.
How much do you love too that he goes back to the high school gym to pump that out?
Oh, it's great. It's spectacular. Yeah. I love that he gives back to his hometown. It's probably the only place he can go where he's not mauled too. So anywhere in Cleveland, everybody knows who he is. So.
Do you feel like he's a guy, and this is going to sound really stupid to say out loud, but do you feel like he's a guy you've appreciated more since he left than when he was actually playing?
I don't know, man. I loved him when he was here. I really did. But I do because he's been such an ambassador. I mean, he's such a quiet ambassador, but he's still such an ambassador for the school and the program since he's left too. Like, he's always, you know, anytime he does say something, which isn't very often, he always is representing the G. So I still appreciate him so much even today.
I think for me, part of it is he was so good the whole time he was there. And he was so good early, you know? I mean, I'll never forget when he debuted against Clemson, just how you go, who is this kid? Like, people are just bouncing off him like he's a snowplow. And, I mean, you know, and then obviously to go out the way they went out, playing in the national title game. But I don't know, man. I don't think when he was there, I ever consumed him like, dude, we are watching a generational player right now, like I did when Todd was there. And now that he's gone, I go, dude, he was generational. Like, one of the greatest to ever wear the uniform, generational.
I think it's because of the personality. Because Todd has such a magnetic personality. You were drawn 100%. To him. Nick, his personality was so overshadowed by Sony's personality because they were a combination. It was Nick and Sony, Nick and Sony, Nick and Sony. You split them up at college level, you still think of Nick and Sony, but you give him, like in the pros, you see how special he is by himself, even though he does have a running mate in Cleveland. Like, he's one of the top three or four backs in the NFL right now.
100%.
Hands down.
Yeah.
So, and if you give him, you know, the keys to that, I mean, he's with Kareem Hunt right now, but if you just give him the lead back role and let him carry the ball 25 times a game, because he's one of those backs that gets, the more carries he gets, the better he does. I think he could very easily run for 2K in the NFL.
Well, maybe that's a piece of it too, is for as good and as magnetic and as memorable as Herschel and Todd both were when they were wearing the red and black, neither one of them had NFL careers to mimic their college careers. I think that's fair to say, don't you? I mean, I will say this, I'm caveating that with, I do think Herschel's professional career is very undersold. I think he had a very good professional career. He just wasn't Hall of Famer Herschel Walker, right? Which I think a lot of people probably anticipated. Whereas Nick, if he stays healthy, he could very easily be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Todd had a four-year stretch that probably will go down as one of the best four-year stretches in NFL history. But
sure.
I mean, I saw a stat on Todd the other day. I think that he still leads the league in touchdowns since 2016, and he didn't even play last year. Either that or he's like top two or three. It's like him and Henry, which is crazy. But he's very much a career that's very Terrell Davis-esque. Very dominant for a couple of years, and then his body broke down. Now, I know TD got in the Hall of Fame, but TD got in the Hall of Fame because he got two Super Bowls.
Two Super Bowls. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big difference. And I guess I'm making the prediction now that if he stays healthy, Nick has the opportunity to be full legacy. I'm talking what he did at Georgia and what he's done in the NFL. Yeah. The best running back to ever come out of the University of Georgia. That's a big statement, my friend.
Yeah, I could see that.
But what I'm saying is, if we're looking at full picture, what he did at Georgia, what he has the potential to do in his NFL career, if healthy, dude, he'll be a college football Hall of Famer and an NFL Hall of Famer. That's
impressive. I could see that.
Yeah. Because he's going to
– we got NFL training –
he's got the capability, I think, to work himself up the rushing charts, to put himself in some historic conversations if he stays healthy.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
So we've just had NFL training camp start last week, I believe. And I mean, the first preseason game is tomorrow, which just baffles me. So let's make some, with all the dogs in the NFL rookies this year, let's make a couple of bold predictions.
Time out. I want to give you some shine here. You said directly after the draft that you thought of all the dogs drafted, George Pickens had a great opportunity to be rookie of the year. Did you see what Chase Claypool came out and said the other day?
Yeah. Yeah.
Say he's going to lead the NFL in rookie receptions.
I believe that. He's looked amazing. Have you seen the highlights? Like, he's nuts.
He's a stud. He's a stud. And he looks like he put on some weight. I mean, he looks ripped. So I just want to give you a shine on that. You're 3 months ahead of that, brother. So you're on the money.
It all depends on the quarterback there. I mean, if Trubisky plays well, which, I mean, if Trubisky gets a bad rap, but he played in Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, if you let Trubisky play to his strengths, I mean, he's not a terrible quarterback. He's serviceable.
The Chicago Bears, where quarterbacks go to die.
Justin Fields is learning that the hard way. So,
all right. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you. I just wanted to give you your proper shine.
So, who do you think on the defensive side, out of all the players that got drafted, or the rookies, who do you think has the best year this year?
Oh, I can't give you one answer. I got to give you two. And I think they're actually going to benefit each other. I'm going to lead with Jordan Davis because I think he's going to get the most playing time. But I think when the year is all said and done, Nakobe Dean will be the general of the Philadelphia Eagles defense. I mean, the two of them are going to make me watch Eagles games, which, if you know anything about me and Boss,
nauseating.
It is nauseating that I'm even saying that out loud. I have a little bit of puke in my mouth after saying that. But it's real. I cannot wait to watch them. And I just love that they're going to be together. I mean, look, man, I believe in all of them so much. I think they've all got big opportunities. I think Green Bay is a great spot for Quay. I think Quay could have a nice year. I think he's an NFL type guy. And dude, I think Trayvon could have a big year. You know, he's got a lot of pressure. So I really want him to have a big year because I feel like a lot of people knocked that he was the first pick, which irritated me. You just talk about a world-class kid. I mean, the type of kid that if you can't root for him, something's wrong with you. So I hope Trayvon has a monster year just to shut people up. So, man, I'm really rooting for him too. But I just think JD is – when you've got guys already talking about him, like on the roster going, man, that Jordan Davis, people shouldn't be that big and move like that. And there have been multiple NFL guys on active rosters already saying that. So, I mean, listen to what people are saying. You know, for me, he's the one I think will have a big impact. And you know how he is.
Yeah.
Because of his personality, people are going to talk about him. I mean, already the video came out of him singing at rookie night. So, you know, it's JD. I mean, he's larger than life in so many ways.
Yeah.
Who's yours?
Well, I think it's JD too, but I'm going to have a different answer just because I'm going to go the other D-tackle one. I think Devontae is going to have a heck of a year.
Yeah.
So I really do. I think Devontae is going to have the opportunity to have just a huge year.
Yeah. And he's with Quay and Stokesy. So, I mean.
And they play different styles, though. It's not like Jordan is going to be huge in a different way. He's not going to be on the stat sheet, though. Like Devontae, you're going to see some stats out of Devontae. If he stays healthy, you're going to see some stats out of Devontae.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
And realistically, I think that all three, meaning Pickens, Zeus, and Cook, could all have huge years as rookies on their respective teams.
Yeah. I will say, man, we talked about this after the draft. And I respect the Pickens pick. But because of the quarterback that's in place and the offense that's in place, James could have a very impactful year as a rookie. And I think we're going to see most of that receiving.
Yes, I do too.
I just think he is a perfect fit for today's NFL with what he's able to do. Because, dude, they've been showing the games a lot and was watching back the Orange Bowl. Dude, he makes things that aren't easy look easy. Like that over-the-shoulder catch that he made on the long throw, score a touchdown on it. Just, that's a tough play.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He tracked that and made that look simple. And so for them to have that capability from a schematic perspective to put him on a mismatch and do things like that, he could do something. You want to know who else I'm excited to see? Not in this draft class, but Mecole Hardman in Kansas City this season.
Yeah.
I mean,
the guy this year.
He's going to have to be. I mean, you would think he's going to get every opportunity to be the stand-in for Tyreek Hill now that he's gone. So, yeah. The beauty of this is, speaking about an NFL training camp, is we've got so many dogs now to watch that it's made the NFL compelling for me again because I have so many guys that I'm tracking each week going, oh man, I got to see how they did this week or see what they're doing here. It's going to be great. All right. Last thing before I let you go, I want to talk about the Pick'em Challenge. So if you guys follow us on social at all, you know that we're doing the Pick'em Challenge this year for fans and listeners. So we'll have the link in the show notes. You know, we've been doing guest pickers on our preview shows ever since we started the show, and we keep track of them. And the winner of the guest picker challenge gets the 10 pounds of red. Well, now you can get the 10 pounds of red yourself. So come and pick with us. And we've got, I think, 20 plus people signed up now, somewhere in that vicinity. And we want to amp that up. So come ahead and sign up. We're going to have prizes for four season ending finishers. And then we're going to do a weekly prize for best week. And we've got some partners on board that are going to contribute those prizes. It's going to be a lot of fun. And just a nice way, a community type thing for us to convene together, make some picks together, talk about the season, whether it be dog stuff or just the college football season at large. So hop on there. We'll have the link in the show notes, and we'll also kind of, we'll keep having it on our socials each week. So come hang out with us, man. See what you guys can do. Me and Boss are going to pick, but we're not going to be eligible for any of the stuff. But I feel like it's kind of a fun way where we make the picks on the show. I think what we should do, and you tell me if you think it's different, homie, but we should just make the same picks in the pool, right?
Yeah, yeah. Our picks should be whatever our picks are for the week.
Yeah, and then you guys can kind of keep track of what we're doing, and I don't know, it'd be fun. Plus, it'll lessen Boss's load from having to keep track of all of our picks each week.
That is a fair point, yeah.
Unless I do what I'm prone to do, which is change my pick halfway through the episode because somebody has convinced me that I want to do something different, which has happened
several times. So,
yeah. So, well, yeah, but hop on there and do that. And, yeah, guys, we're here, baby. Ball camp tomorrow. Let's get lit, baby. Season is about to be here.
Hey, woo! We're a month away.
Month away, brother. I'm getting jacked up now. Like I'm ready for it. So we're excited for another season with y'all. Can't wait to keep going on this journey with us. And as always, thank y'all so much for listening and hanging out with us. This has been the most fun about Boss and I doing this is just kind of getting to share in this experience with all the Dogs fans. So until our next episode to talk about actual football and fall camp, go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Hey, George is better now.